Hi, welcome to more Writers After Dark. I'm Summer Brooks, and as always, good stories start with the writers. And mostly because wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. And I like to dig into those stories with the folks who are writing them, because finding out what makes the stories click is one way that we can figure out what we're thinking, how we're feeling, and maybe cross a couple bridges along the way. My guest today is Kenneth Kane, who is a dark fiction author. Currently, he's got upcoming anthologies through Crystal Lake Publications, Tales from the Lake Volume 5 and Darker Days, which is a collection of his own fiction, and a new novella called A Season in Hell, which will be coming out September 7th, so you can pre-order it or order it at your convenience. Kenneth, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what is the specialty of a dark fiction author?
So I've been told, you know, mostly what I write is horror, but I do like to seed in some elements from other genres, and I do, you know, because of that, I tend to, and I have trouble with my R's and W's. It's something I've had since I was a kid, so I tend to try to avoid saying that word, and I try to focus more on just calling it with under a broad term, calling it dark fiction. So, in other words, any genre, but with a dark side.
And what draws you to that? What is more appealing to you about just a regular family drama with a dark edge to it, more than crossing over the line into straight horror?
I do write horrific things, but I think I just like to pick out the darkness in our world. And because you see it every day, you see bad things on the news every day or on social media, bad things happen. And I think just by shining a little light on them, sometimes you can expose them. And then when they come up, it maybe makes them a little easier to handle. But I've always been attracted to it since I was a kid. My mom used to watch all, you know, Alfred Hitchcock and Twilight Zone when I was like very young. And I used to sit and watch it with her. And, you know, the movies like The Omen and Psycho, and I just that suspense and that constant dread just always kind of appealed to me and what I wanted to write, you know.
So tell us about how you came to be the editor of the Tales from the Lake anthology, because that's a pretty popular series of anthologies, and you're the editor for Volume 5, which will be coming out in what, November or December?
November 2nd.
November 2nd, yeah. So tell us about how you came to be editing this particular volume.
So at the time, I had just this is my last collection, Embers, which came out from Crystal Lake Publishing as well. I had just gotten back from Borderlands boot camp February last year, which is a great program. I can't recommend it enough. It really helps give you a lot of confidence in editing your own work and other people's work. So I had come back from there, and somebody, a friend of mine, wanted me to give a quick critique on one of his short stories. And I did, and I don't know what it was. I mean, I've been asked to edit anthologies before. I've always just been a big chicken about it. It seemed like a lot of work. I was afraid of screwing it up. I mean, so many, you know, you have that whole imposter syndrome. But something about that process at Borderlands Bootcamp just really kind of woke me up. And when I came back and edited his story, I think he went to Joe at Crystal Lake and said, hey, maybe you should take a gander at what Ken's doing. And at the same time, I was getting edits back for Embers. And, you know, this was final edits. And I told Joe, I said, wait a minute, I'm going to re-edit everything. And he's like, you're going to re-edit everything? I was like, yeah, trust me, it will make it better. And I put a lot of work into it and re-edited the whole thing, you know, just taking what I learned from that boot camp and putting it to good use. And, you know, maybe Joe saw some of those edits, and for whatever reason, he asked me, and I just told myself, I said, you know what? This time I'm not going to chicken out. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to put myself through it. I'm going to trust my instincts and do the best I can. So that's how it all came to be.
Do you get as much fun from editing other people's stories as you do from writing and editing your own?
I do. I've always been one that said there's a lesson in every story. So whenever you're reading and, you know, you'll see people who'll be like, this book sucks. I'm not going to read it, you know, past the first paragraph. But I like to read like all of it. I like to see what works for certain stories and what doesn't. So I'm always using, you know, when I'm editing someone else's work, I'm taking those elements of what I think works and what doesn't work and applying it to my own fiction to improve my own craft. So I actually enjoy that process of picking apart a story. You know, it means a lot to me to see the elements that go into, you know, the subtext and the layering and the dialogue and, you know, building up characters. I like to analyze all that. So it takes me, I'm a very slow reader most of the time because I'm constantly analyzing, but that's fun for me. So I, even with my own stories, I might edit some of them, you know, several dozen times.
So for Tales from the Lake Volume 5, what was there a theme you were looking for? What sort of story were you looking for to include in this volume?
So with my own collections, I've always had this thing where, you know, like some authors like to have their short story, their short story collections. All the stories have the same theme, or they're in a town, or revolve around a certain character, stuff like that. I like to cast a wider net and tell a variety of stories. And I run these little threads that through the stories that connect them to each other. So there's not an overall theme or a binding story, but the stories are tied together through these little threads. And when I started Tales from Lake Volume 5, my instinct was to do the same thing. I wanted threads to run to the stories that tie them together so that you're coming off one story and then, you know, like say, and the, I'm not saying that there's a vampire story in this, but I'm using this as an example. So there's a vampire story. You don't just, you know, directly go to a story about a little girl and her doll. That kind of can be jarring. So you want the stories to kind of tie together in a way. And so what I did is I shortlisted quite a few stories and looked for the patterns. And that's pretty much how I handled that.
So what pattern did you feel emerging as you were going through these stories? What did you have a theme or a pattern in mind before you started reading them? Or did you sort of just let that bubble up to the top as you were going through them all?
I try to let the pattern develop itself. And I try not to keep it as like one encompassing pattern, but if I had to probably say anything of my body of work, something a lot of people say about it is that I deal with a lot of loss. So I do hit upon that largely with Tales from the Lake Volume 5. I mean, there are a lot of stories about loss, but you know, there's also other threads that run through the stories that tie them together in other ways. But yeah, overall, probably loss.
And did that reflect something, since you have both the anthology, the Tales from the Lake anthology, and your own collection, Darker Days, coming out, was there a carryover between the two? Or were you working on them totally far apart from each other in time?
So Darker Days, I actually had edits done for that, like my initial edits, last year. So that was really a contract that came out shortly after Embers. So when I signed for Embers, I also signed for that collection shortly afterwards. So there was a long time between when I, you know, put together Darker Days and Tales from the Lake Volume 5. I just think that that's something that always kind of interested me. You know, I grew up watching, you know, One Step Beyond and The Twilight Zone and shows like that, where a lot of the stories have that theme of loss in one way or another. I think that's something that fascinates a lot of us. in a morbid way, because you know, who isn't afraid of losing someone you care about or losing something you care about?
So what entries in Tales from the Lake Volume 5 spoke to you the most or impacted you the most? Which, if you were to, because there are people who buy anthologies and just like hit or miss, read a couple of them and then move on. But if you were to tell somebody, okay, these are the stories in this volume you absolutely have to read, which would they be?
Oh, it would be hard to pick. Just that's such a tough thing, because I love them all. I mean, really, honestly, there were so many more stories I loved than what is represented in this anthology. I had to let go of stories that I wanted to put in here so very much. It really came down to a budget. I had a budget that I had to work within, and taking two stories that I love and saying I love this one just a little bit more, maybe. You know what I mean? So I mean, it was so hard. I could have easily put together, you know, three volumes of excellent work. I mean, the quality of work that authors sent me, I couldn't be more thankful. I mean, they really treated this call with a lot of respect. So that said, I mean, one of the stories that really stood out to me, I mean, and I love them all, so please, everyone, please, I love them all, but I really was fascinated with this story by Allison Pang called A Dream Most Ancient and Alone.
Okay, so we'll tell people to keep an eye out for that. So, and hopefully an easier question, of the stories that you were not able to include, is there an author who you would say, keep an eye out for this person's work and make sure you read it when you hear they're coming out?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, that's the really cool thing about doing this, an anthology like this, is I was introduced to so many new authors' work, and I follow them on Facebook now and look for their work. One that stands to mind is a story that I just really hated getting rid of, but Michael Bailey is a great author, and his story really moved me.
Is it? Do you know if it's appearing in any other collections or his own work?
I don't, but I have no doubt that it will sell. I've already seen, you know, I've already seen several of the stories that I rejected show up in other magazines, other anthologies, which is excellent. I mean, because, you know, you hate to reject a story, and then when you see it out there, you're like, oh, thank God, somebody else took it, and it's a good press, it's a good publication, and you feel happy for that author, you know, because, I mean, that's the hardest thing to do is reject. Mm-hmm.
So what's the hardest thing for you about curating your own anthology with Darker Days? I mean, you have to, that mean, I would think that's a situation where Kill Your Darlings takes on a whole new level of just regard, because you're choosing between your own work. How do you choose which ones stay in?
Well, that's an interesting question. So what I write, and I'm trying to get away from this and focus more on longer fiction, but I write a lot of short stories. And what tends to happen is I write them, and then I'll edit, and I'll edit, and I'll edit. And when I feel like I can't edit anymore, I'll send them out. And I typically only have like a handful of presses that I, you know, want to see them at. So I'll send to those presses. You know, I'm not sending out, like, I know some people have this, I don't know how they do it, but they have this ability to send out a story to like 200 different places until it gets accepted. I don't know. Maybe it's just something to me. I don't know that if it's a patience thing, I don't have the patience for it, or the, you know, the willpower, or if I just know that, you know, at some point there is a cost savings by, you know, hey, it didn't get into the presses I want, I'm going to pull it away. So, you know, I usually tend to weed out the weaker stories long before it gets to the process of selecting the stories that go into a collection. So what ends up happening is I have this folder. I forget what I call it. I call it like the lost folder, the folder of lost hopes and dreams or something, where all those crappy stories go. There's literally hundreds of them stuffed in there. And I might, you know, use them to pick out little pieces for other future stories. You never know what you can mine out of an old story that didn't work. But most of the stories that I feel work, they stay in this active folder. And it's when that folder starts getting really full that I go, I need to make a collection, put a collection together. And I start looking for the patterns like I did with Tales from Lake Volume 5. I start looking for the connective tissue for the stories and how they, you know, go together. So it's less about what stories belong and which ones don't. It's more how they fit together. It's kind of like a little puzzle for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. When you're writing your own short stories, do you just come up with an idea? Is there something you see like on television or out in the real world that just sparks a thought? What, take us through a short story creation in the mind of Kenneth.
So I jot down notes all day long, like all day long, all night long. I'll wake up in the middle of the night and jot down notes. I have literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of notes, all on my phone. So it's always like this little tiny keyboard with my big old, you know, sausage thumbs trying to get that in the middle of the night, like 3 o'clock in the morning, trying to type a note in. When I wake up in the morning, it looks like Klingon. It's so hard to read. I have to translate it. But I have all these notes that I like that I'm constantly taking. And then I also like take notes on all my dreams, my nightmares. And I'm one of those people, I people watch a lot. So I'll go to the mall, and while my wife and daughter are shopping, I'll sit on a chair and just watch people and look for interesting things to happen. Like I was talking recently about a story in my second collection. I forget what it's called now, but we were on vacation. I was sitting on the edge of a pool, just relaxing. And I saw this woman combing the knots out of her daughter's hair, her young daughter's hair, with a hairbrush. But the look on her face, she just looked so angry. And that's where I got the idea for that story. Usually it's like two or three of those elements coming together. You know, things just kind of, they just kind of click. I keep them all in one folder. And so when I, it's not that I need them there because I tend to remember them all. So I have all those elements, you know, those notes and separate elements in there. And just one day it clicks and two or three of them will come together and I'll just start writing the story. I don't create an outline. I'm more of a pantser, but I have those notes like in my head all the time. So when they fit the right way, then the story just kind of takes off.
Okay. On that note, I have to ask, there's a story in Darker Days. I think it's called Prey. I was about halfway through the story before I realized that the point of view characters were the animals. And where did that come from? Because that was when I realized what was going on, I was completely enthralled. Because at first I'm like, are these werewolves? No, they're just regular. Okay, cool. So where did that generate?
You know, that is such a weird one because I have no idea. That was one of those, I think it was a dream. I think it was a dream. I often dream about other worlds you know, I must have been watching like, you know, a lot of medieval type things, you know, like The Hobbit or something like that during the time. For whatever reason, like when I watch a lot of those types of shows, like The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, and all in one space, and, you know, probably, and I'm not saying that that's where it came from, but, you know, when you're like in those worlds and then you go to bed at night, sometimes it will put you in that world or a similar world and you make up your own little story. So that's probably where that's one of those ones that was bizarre. I wanted to do something different and I just was looking for an answer, and I had this thing about alien cats, and that was the whole note said alien cats, and that's where that came from.
So are we talking alien cats as in extraterrestrial cats, or cats that are the creature from Alien?
Oh, no, like extraterrestrial.
Okay. Because yeah. I'm sitting here going, this, when you're talking about how it came out of a dream, the first thing I thought of were those old Animal Planet documentaries. And now we see the lioness take down the gazelle, you know.
That, You know, that may have been where I got it from. I can tell you, there's one part where one of the creatures like curls up its neck and creates like a fan, and I got that idea from a scene in Jurassic Park where where he's out in the car trying to open the gate, and that little dinosaur opens up the fan. I've always thought that was cool, and I was like, man, that would be cool if a cat could do that, you know. So I tried to give, if you notice, I tried to give those cats like all kinds of different kinds of anatomy from different animals or fake animals.
So now I'm imagining a saber-toothed tiger with that kind of like head fan.
Yeah. Is that cool though? And I think, didn't I give them their tail had like a rattle on it or something like that?
There was something weird about their tails and like how they were hunt and double back, and they were a lot smarter than the humanoid, strange looking humanoid creatures that were hunting them. And they were like backtracking and stuff. I'm like, dude, really? I want to see more of this. That story needs to be like an animated short. An animated short film, because that was just the visuals I was getting in my head from it were just off the charts.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I got a similar comment about a story from Embers called The Bad Men, which was, again, it was set on another planet, and somebody was like, one of the reviewers was like, you need to make that a novel. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe someday.
Well, have you thought about putting out your short stories or novellas as something for yourself or someone else to make into short films or graphic novels?
I haven't looked into it a whole lot. I mean, I'm actually preparing, hopefully next year, to get into the process of looking for an agent. Maybe that's something they could to help out with. But you know, it's always something I'm open to. It's just, you know, nothing is none of the offers that I've seen so far have appealed. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. I want to see my work made into movies and you know, short films or whatever, and a series. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to give it away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But as a suggestion, the one short story, literally, I'm angry at it because I'm blanking on the name. It's the sheriff in the zombie town.
Oh, Rayford Jones.
Yeah, the creepy jewelry thing. That would make such a fantastic short film.
Cool.
Just the visuals from the people as they get taken over by the jewelry in another lifetime, that would have been a Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for saying that. That means a lot to me because I love that series so much, you know.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if people appreciate just how much horror was in Twilight Zone. Like, yeah, they were science fiction settings, but there's some horrific stuff going on in to those people's lives.
Yeah. And some of them were just such a simple story, you know. And then same with the One Step Beyond and all those other series, you know, Tales from the Dark Side. I mean, all great stuff. I love that stuff.
Yeah, I love horror anthology films. I think Tales from the Hood is one of the most underrated horror anthologies out there. I'm like, how can you not love that trilogy of stories?
I haven't seen that. I'll have to check that out.
Oh, yeah. Old school. Clarence Williams III plays a creepy undertaker.
Oh, that.
And these three, shall we say, hoodlums come to his funeral home at his request, because he says he has something that they've been looking for. Some of their stash was missing, and he found it. And then he tells them the stories of several of the, shall we say, recently deceased who are on display in their coffins in his funeral home. And the stories are just deliciously dark. So yeah, check out Tales from the Hood. Hopefully they make another one of these. It's been almost 20 years, I think, since the first one.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely make a note to what.
But yeah, some of the stories that were in Darker Days, I think would translate great to a visual setting.
Well, it's interesting because when I write them, being a pantser, I'm very much in a visual setting while I'm writing them. You know, it's almost like I'm part of the story moving through the universe, and maybe that's what helps that come to you know, to the reader. Hopefully, if I'm doing my job right.
Well, the first of your fall releases that is coming out is a novella called Season in Hell, which interested me because the main character on the cover art seems to be a black woman, and it's a baseball story. And that intrigued me on a lot of levels. So where did Season in Hell come from, and what spurred you to release it as a novella on its own?
So originally it was going to be part of Darker Days. It was just something that I had shopped around a little bit, and finally I just said, you know what, I'm going to put it in Darker Days. And then it was discussed, you know, hey, this might stand better on its own. So I had this idea. You might remember there were all these paintings in the 80s and 90s. I forget who the artist was, but he did them like Muhammad Ali and Hank Aaron.
That would be Leroy Neiman.
That's right.
There's a photo. There's a painting he did of Nolan Ryan in the old ice cream cone Houston Astros uniforms from the 80s that caught my eye. I've always wanted that, and unfortunately, yeah, I can't afford it. So I just daydream about it. But yeah, Leroy Neiman.
So I went to the artist. The artist is Luke Spooner, and you know, Joe put me in touch with him. He said, "Tell him what you're thinking for the cover." And I said, "Do you remember those paintings?" I said, "That's the feel I want for this." And I described, you know, the main character, Keisha Green, and you know, trying to. And he just knocked it out of the park. I mean, pun intended. he did an awesome job. I mean, really, that story has been one that has like stuck with me for a long time. When I was very young in Chicago, the suburbs of Chicago, there was a girl who played on one of my baseball teams. And all she wanted to do was play baseball. And she was just a kid, you know, I mean, very young. And I remember the things that were said about her, you know. All she wanted to do was play a game, and back then it was like a different world. People were a little bit more free with their insults, I guess, at least in person to person. Nowadays, people fling insults all over the place online. But you know, people were, you know, very much like, what's a girl doing playing a guy's game? And those memories kind of always stuck with me. And like I said, I have these notes that I take down through all the time, and that story clicked about, I want to say, 2.5, 3 years ago, maybe even longer. And it's just one of those ones I had started like a paragraph on and, you know, put it aside. That's usually what I'll do is I get the idea and I'll start a paragraph and I'll put it aside and kind of ruminate on it and everything. And eventually, you know, with the current climate in the U.S. and actually throughout the world, that story called to me. Like, her voice, she just kind of came through and said, we need to tell this story now. And I just dug in and it came all out at once. And, you know, a lot of editing, obviously. But it just appealed to me. It seems relevant right now. And, you know, I don't know that I purposely went after that. It's just the way it ended up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it struck me when I saw the cover because it put me in mind. There was always a scene. Do you remember the movie A League of Their Own?
Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's an awesome movie. But there was one scene during practice where a ball rolled over to where some black women and black men were standing. And the black woman picked up the ball. And Gina Davis's character came in close and said, here, throw it here. And she throws it by her to one of the other players standing farther and farther back. And it was just this one moment of, oh, not the black women can't even play on the baseball teams with the white women the same way that the black men couldn't play baseball with the white men, even though most of the white men have gone to fight in World War II, they still wouldn't let the black men play. And then the black women are even further marginalized. And I was saying, I wonder if there's a story there, if there's a movie there about black women playing baseball in the 40s that we have never heard about. And seeing your cover brought all of those thoughts back, going, I wonder if that story is still out there waiting to be told.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not really sure. Like, you know, it's an, you know, I didn't purposely make Keisha black. It was just one of those things. I'm very much a proponent of, you know, we're in our, you know, in the real world, you look around and there people are so different. It's a very diverse world out there. And in my own stories, I try to treat the world the same way. It's a very diverse world inside my stories, more so as I've grown as a writer, probably. You know, when you first start, maybe you don't define those spaces as well. You know, create using your setting, your minor characters as part of that setting, you know. So, you know, I usually just get a visual of a character in mind. And that was a very clear visual in my head as I was writing. So, you know, I didn't go into it like planning for her to be that way or to be black or planning for this guy to be that or this guy to be that. It just ended up that way. I let them choose what they want to be themselves, you know.
So about how long did it take you to write this from actually just starting to put the story together until you said, okay, now we can let it go?
So I wrote that story very quickly. And I edited it. It must have been like a month it took me before I was subbing it out. And I subbed it out a few times and something just seemed to be missing. And everywhere I sent it, they're like, this is a great story. It just seems to be missing something. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And I kept, you know, going back to it. And so it's sitting in this folder for a long time after this, you know, it was like the second rejection. And I'm like, something just is missing. I'm going to set it aside. And then one day, you know, I'm talking to a friend of mine and we're talking about some of my other work and it clicked. I was like, I don't have the dialogue right. I don't have the right level of dialogue. So, you know, it's the story itself. It's a baseball story, but it's more of a baseball rapper. So there are details from the game, but more so the actual story is about, you know, about this woman and what happens to her. And the main character, the character who we see it all through, Dylan Peterson, his growth as a human being. So I had to add dialogue in so that that story came out and the details of the game kind of faded into the background some, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, either way, it's a very compelling read. Like you said, some of it is a bit triggering for people who are sensitive to, shall we say, verbal abuse and
physical
physical abuse, assholish behavior that you can't get away from. But it's something I think folks should read. And like you said, it'll be available September 7th for you to be. Is it digital and print or just digital?
It will be just digital for a while. Eventually a print edition will come out. I'll be giving away a few copies on Facebook, and I think a couple other places are giving away copies. So I do have a few print copies, you know, just a handful that will be given away. And then maybe a month or so down the road, I think the print edition will be available.
Okay. And what about the due dates for Darker Days and Tales from the Lake Volume 5?
So Darker Days is December 7th and Tales from the Lake Volume 5 is November 2nd.
Okay, so we'll get to see your handiwork as an editor first.
Yes, I'm excited about it.
Any plans to do any more anthologies? What sort of other fiction would you like to put together as a collection?
Well, I'm actually working on another collection. I want to try to see if I could find a home for it, and hopefully I will. I have a couple collections I'm floating around and a novella that I recently finished up, but I'm also working on an anthology that I'm editing for next spring called When the Clock Strikes 13. And I'm also reworking my trilogy, which is one of the first things I wrote 10 years ago, which is a nightmare to go through all over again. But I'm reworking that to make those stories a little cleaner, a little slicker, and maybe put out something new in that world. So that trilogy may be coming back to print end of next year, is what I'm hoping.
Cool. So, outside of dark fiction and horror, what do you like to read?
I read a lot of self-help books. And maybe that's just the author of me. I don't know. I love these "Don't Sweat the Small Stuff" books. I've read like six or seven of them. But I'm often buying these, like I have the little blue book and the little green book and the little book of life secrets and stuff like that. I like those a lot. I tend to read a lot of anthologies. I tend to read a lot of what people give me. So if I'm being honest, because I don't know if it's like this for everyone. I assume it is, but people give you books all the time when you're an author. Just here, check this out. So I tend to read whatever that is. That does end up being a lot of sci-fi, and perhaps that's the reason why I've always been interested in science fiction. Philip K. Dick stuff and even newer, like this, I really loved the Dark Mirror series on Netflix, which is like a really dark science fiction. I love that. And you could see that happening tomorrow, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. I love that. So I do tend to focus on that kind of stuff.
Okay, outside of Dark Mirror, do you watch a lot of horror, science fiction, or are you have a secret rom-com fetish?
I do. I watch so on. I watch a lot of these Netflix series. I just get caught up in them. One of them I watch a lot is Orange Is the New Black. I've not read the books. I don't know how if it's books or book. I know that there's at least one book, but I have watched that series pretty extensively. Starts out good. I'm not so sure this last season was the greatest.
You are not the only person to say that.
Yeah. So I do. I watched that. I watched, The Walking Dead, even though I probably should have stopped watching that 2 years ago, or maybe even longer. I don't know. It gets to a point where in these series where you've been with them so long that it's hard to let them go. It's hard to break up. So for some reason, I've stuck with that one. I don't know if I'm going to be into that. I watch, a lot of these newer ones, like the one on Netflix just called Dark. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Isn't that one new?
Yeah, it's like a German, I think. I believe so. I believe you can watch it two ways. You can watch it with like the German voice with English subtitles, or you can watch a dubbed version of it. It is so good, and that is dark sci-fi. So that is really interesting. It takes a few episodes to get into, but once you get into it, you'll love it.
Well, I will move that higher up on my watch list then.
Yeah, it's really cool. I watched the whole dubbed version. Most people prefer the German with the English subtitles. I just have bad eyes, so I don't want to sit there and try to, because what ends up happening is my wife reads it all to me.
Cool. So, what else are you working on other than your new anthology for next year?
A lot of older stuff. So I have these books that I'm at that point in my career where I've gotten some rights back. So I'm trying to find homes for some of that older work, get it back out there. A couple of them I'll probably end up self-publishing because of the situation with the rights that I got back. But other than that, I have three novels, I believe, that I've gotten to the point they need edits, so I'm planning on getting those all edited and hopefully get at least one of them out in the submission circles soon. But then one of the other ones, this one called Construct, is one that I hope to shop around to agents.
Cool. So they're not a series. They're different standalone separate stories.
Correct. Correct.
Cool. That is a rare thing. You have people coming out with series and continuations. Like, yeah, this is book 12 of I don't know how many.
I saw it, when I got the rights back to the trilogy, originally I thought to just rewrite the whole thing. So there's a lot of different characters in the trilogy, and so each chapter is pretty much a new character, and you know, you'll get those characters. There's some that you get more of, but it bounces around quite a bit. So I thought about breaking it up into all these books, and then each novella would be from a perspective of one character, and so the series would be titled by the name of the character. And then I was I was like, oh, that's a cool idea. I was like, I'm gonna do that. And then it got to the point where I just said, what am I thinking? This is all old work. I'm not gonna invest all that time in all this old work when I could be writing something new and making something new out of it to put out there. And so I put that idea aside. Maybe I'll do that with some future volume or something. I don't know. But I was just like, you know, the older stuff, I'm not going to invest all that time into. I'd rather be writing something new.
Cool. So where can our listeners find you online to go exploring into more of the stuff you've written?
At my website, kennethwkane.com. That's C-A-I-N. I have all my social media links and Amazon links, and all those links are all on my website. And you can get a free novella for signing up for my newsletter there. Jade.
There you go. Cool. Well, Kenneth, thank you so much for your time today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
And we'll have those links to Kenneth's website and some of his work. I especially hope people check out Season in Hell and Darker Days. And we'll chat about the Tales from the Lake series from Crystal Lake Publishing another time, but we shall save more horror talk for later. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to call. The number is 602-635-6976. We can talk about if you make any distinctions between dark fiction and horror fiction and what your preferences are with that style of storytelling. You can also send me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com. Like I said, any questions, any comments you have about what we've talked about, the authors we're talking to, and some other stories you maybe want to hear about or read reviews about. You can listen to Writers After Dark through iTunes, through Stitcher, and through Google Play. And if you're enjoying Writers After Dark, you can leave us a review on iTunes and on Stitcher. Let people know that you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter, Write After Dark, over there. And as always, the website is writersafterdark.com. I want to thank everybody who's supporting Writers After Dark and Slice of Sci-Fi and Babylon Podcast through your pledges through Patreon. If you want to add your own pledges, go to patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Something interesting, I'm hoping in the next month or two to get different tiers enabled to provide perks for different levels for where people are contributing at. I have bound copies of advanced reader copies. I have finished paperbacks, finished hardcovers, and courtesy of Slice of Sci-Fi, I've also got plenty of Blu-rays and DVDs to share the wealth. So keep an eye out for those. Again, the URL is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. I want to also throw a shout out to Shadon and Sybin Quest for providing the music for this show. Thank you so much. There are links on the website you can follow if you want to check out more musical creations by them. But that will do it for this episode. See you next time. And remember, keep on looking for your own stories.